Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Yes, it is time for Dear Science, and we're joined by Marcus Jones from AUT. How are you going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good. How are things going over at AUT?
The
year's wrapping up.
The year is wrapping up. Students are going home, so it's all a bit quieter.
Good. That must be good for you, I suppose. So we're talking a couple of cool little science stories for today. The first one, global average surface wind speeds have trended towards slowing since the 1980s, but new research is suggesting that the trend is turning around. So could you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, that's right. So this story I actually saw yesterday, and I thought it was quite interesting. There was... there's a new study that's just come out in one of the Nature journals that says that global wind speeds have tended to increase quite a bit since about 2010. And this is after a few decades, about three or four decades, of gradually declining wind speeds. Mm. And this is, I don't really have the answers as to why this is happening. There's a few ideas, but this is potentially good news. Increased wind speeds is very good news for the wind energy industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got more and more wind turbines going up around the world, especially offshore. And the speedier winds could see energy produced by a single turbine grow by about 37%. So nearly 40% boost in the amount of energy you can generate just from a single wind turbine.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. It seems though... seeing as they don't really know the reason of why, like what are the speculations?
That's right. So apparently, since the 1980s, there's been a slow decrease in wind speeds around the world, and this was called terrestrial stilling. So just gradual slowing of the winds, and had it continued till the end of the century, wind speeds would have declined by about 21%, and that would have been a problem because it would have about halved the amount of power available for the wind industry. But scientists didn't really know what was causing the decline. So one theory was that as we were building more cities, increased urbanization, the ground was essentially rougher. I guess houses and buildings and especially tall buildings, I guess, make the ground not so flat.
Right. Yep.
And that could in itself curb or slow down the winds. You know, they get sort of basically slowed down as it goes over the rough terrain.
Right.
But that doesn't explain what's happening now. So wind speeds are getting faster. So maybe if that is happening, something else is causing the increase in wind speeds now. But it's not clear what that is. Maybe there's something to do with climate change.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, is it something to do with... Yeah, because I'm wind is mysterious for me, at least. Anyway, I'm not a scientist. How does wind generate?
Well, wind is just obviously mass movement of air from areas of high pressure to areas of low pressure.
Right.
So as parts of the world heat up and parts are cooler, there is differing pressures as the air masses rise and fall. And that rising and falling and increasing pressure and lowering of pressure moves air around, and that's what causes
I suppose in that sense it could definitely be linked to climate change.
It could, but it wasn't certainly conclusive in this report.
Right, right. Oh well, that is good news for the natural power sector, I suppose. Yeah,
very good news. They do end though. They say that they suggest that wind speeds could decline again.
Yeah,
I mean they don't really know. But they said that this should persist, this sort of increase should persist for at least the next 10 years or so.
Excellent. Yeah. So the next story we have this afternoon, astronomers have drawn their first global map of Titan, which is Saturn's largest moon. How significant is this as an achievement?
Well, it's significant because, really because of the type of place Titan is,
right.
I think. So many of you may know that for the last, until last year really, for the last... about 10 years or so, we've had a probe whizzing around Saturn, and it made more than 100 flybys of Saturn's biggest moon, which is Titan. And Titan's a little bit special in the solar system because it has a thick atmosphere, and it has standing water, which is really the only other place apart from Earth in the solar system that has, standing liquid on the surface.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's not water.
Oh.
Because it's far, far, far too cold.
Yeah.
It's actually liquid methane. But it present as a liquid in lakes on the surface of Titan.
Right.
And what's sort of surprising about this is the diversity of terrain on this moon. So there are areas of lakes. There are areas of a few craters, but not so many. There are dunes. There are sort of hill areas, and there's sort of quite big, vast plains. Mm. But there's a lot of variety of terrain.
Yeah.
And this is interesting. The Titan has an atmosphere a bit like Earth. It has wind. Again, maybe wind speeds are increasing there. I don't know. It's got rain. It's got mountains. It's very, apart from the composition, which is quite different to the water and the air on Earth, it has similar sort of geological features.
Right. Yeah. So is this the first time that astronomers have been able to have a broad view of the entire moon?
Of Titan, yes. Right. I mean, they've mapped other moons. They've mapped, obviously, our moon and other places in the solar system.
Yeah.
But they really wanted to find out what it was like on Titan because it's so interesting and because it is so sort of familiar and similar to how Earth looks.
Yeah.
You know?
Is there much plan? I mean, would there be a plan to try and head to that moon?
Yeah, so there is
another probe?
Yeah, there is a plan, not in the very near future, but there is a plan to send a drone. So something that will fly about on Titan.
It's amazing.
By about, which is really cool, called Dragonfly, and that's slated for about 15 years from now, so about 2034.
Okay.
And that's going to fly around, study the surface, land, maybe take samples, I don't know, but there are no plans to send orbiters to Saturn or its other moons, but you know, we've got this idea to go to Titan again.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Our final story today, due to what's being dubbed as a happy accident, there has been a new pure form of carbon that has been discovered. Is this quite exciting for the chemistry?
Well, I'm a chemist, so this is sort of interesting.
Yeah.
And it's sort of interesting, exciting. I mean, we know, so when I was a kid, carbon was either diamond or graphene. And graphene was what you found in pencils.
Yeah.
That's what graphite. Yeah. And diamond, obviously, a little bit more expensive. But during the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, several new forms of pure carbon, these are called allotropes of carbon, were discovered. So one of the more well-studied at the moment is a thing called graphene, which is a very, very thin sheet of carbon, just one atom thick, which has interesting properties for electronics and high conductivity and all that sort of stuff. There's carbon nanotubes, all sorts of different ball-shaped structures of carbon, just containing carbon. So carbon's really interesting because it likes to form bonds with itself.
Right.
And it's sort of unique. There are other elements that bind with themselves, but not anywhere near to the extent that carbon does.
Mm.
And so there are all of these interesting structures and forms of carbon. But the thing about this one is this has one interesting property that is not really... it is quite different to many of the other forms of carbon, and that it is magnetic. It's called a ferromagnet, so it's like a permanent magnet.
Okay.
So you've probably held a permanent magnet before. You can stick it on things and whatever. But this is a magnetic form of carbon. It's also conductive and it's reflective. It looks a bit like aluminium. This has been known about for about 2 years now. So they've discovered it about 2 years ago, but they're still trying to figure out exactly what makes it do what it does. So what is the structure of this thing? And the best guess is that it is sort of they've made it in very, very thin films so far, and that it is sort of like a corrugated, you know what a corrugated sort of roof looks like?
Yeah.
And so it's several corrugated sheets that are sort of linked but stacked on top of each other.
Hmm.
So there's something linking between the sheets, but then there's also this sort of planar type corroded structure.
Right. Yeah. So they're looking at potential uses for it in the future, like potentially in the medical fields.
Right. And so the nice thing about carbon is it's obviously biocompatible. We are mainly carbon. And if it's magnetic, then it opens up a whole new sort of realm for sensing in biology, for making maybe targeted diagnostic sort of medicines and things like that, and it was like you said, it was a happy accident. They weren't trying to make this thing; they were trying to actually make something else. And interestingly, that's other types of carbon have been found that way. So yeah, people were doing one thing, and
lots of things in the scientific world have discovered that way.
Absolutely, it's very serendipity.
Yeah,
yeah, and they still don't know quite what it is. So right. There's still some doubt mm-hmm. about it is being what it is, and whether there's impurities in there that are giving these magnetic properties or whatever. Mm. But they've been working on it for a couple of years, and it seems like this is this new form of carbon. But it really is the magnetism that makes it most interesting.
So yeah, because did I read that it was when it's at a certain temperature, it becomes magnetic?
Well, no, it's magnetic up to a certain temperature.
Oh, right.
So it holds its magnetism to about 120 or something degrees C, uh-huh. which is very useful because you're not going to get those sort of temperatures in the body. So it's basically it'll be stable and magnetic in the body. So you can so they have a demonstration where they have little flakes of this stuff on a liquid, and they put a magnet over the top, and the little flakes follow where the magnet's going. You see, so it's definitely magnetic. It's very, very hard. It's very conductive. So it's definitely interesting. Now, they have a couple of suggestions for names for this. One of the boring one is U-carbon, as in U for unusual, which is pretty dull. But the guy who actually made this first is trying to get attention for adamantia after the medieval alchemists who sought in vain for adamant, an unbreakable lodestone. So this is a very hard substance. So he's trying to get adamantia. It's a bit cool.
Oh, okay.
U-carbon.
And who decides on the name?
I've no idea. Hmm. probably IUPAC, the right. international body that decides all of this
right.
stuff.
Oh, well, I guess watch this space for this new new form of carbon.
Absolutely.
Quite exciting. Well, thank you, Marcus.
Cool.
Thank you for joining us today.
Very, very welcome.
Appreciate it.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.